And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week was the 70th anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling Brown versus Board of Education, which effectively set the stage for ending the Jim Crow laws that were so prevalent in the country 70 and more years ago. And to mark this occasion, Clarence Thomas attacked Brown versus Board of Education and said the Supreme Court didn't really have the authority to make such decisions. Clarence Thomas holds the seat that Thurgood Marshall had, who wrote that Brown versus Board of Education.
Well, no, he was the lawyer for
it. Oh, he was the lawyer, right, for it, right.
For Brown, yes, exactly. Right. He wasn't on the court right at that time.
Right. So, but that's a hell of an anniversary celebration, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't call them regressives for nothing. You know, they want to go back to a different time. I mean, his idea of jurisprudence has not evolved, but devolved considerably. When you look at the things that he's talking about now, you know, with the Dobbs decision, he said they didn't go far enough that they should be talking about undoing the Griswold decision about contraception,
mm-hmm,
and personal rights. And of course, it's the hypocritical philosophy that he doesn't want the Supreme Court to get involved in anything that helps people in terms of their personal rights. What he does think the Supreme Court should get involved in is anything that restricts people's rights on things that he doesn't want them to have, or the folks that are, you know, sponsoring him sort of don't want it to have.
Well, that's a very good point, because the comment that he made was in the context of a Supreme Court ruling on a gerrymandering case in South Carolina, in which he upheld the racial gerrymandering. Right?
Right. Yeah, he said gerrymandering isn't one of those things that's under the purview of the courts. This is
that's
a political
right
thing.
It's a political thing. But didn't he take exactly the opposite case, a point of view, on a case from Louisiana?
Well, the court did, where they upheld, now for the second time, a map that requires a second predominantly or largely black district, that they couldn't gerrymander around that to cut that out. So didn't quite make sense in that context, but not everything that the Supreme Court does make sense.
Well, how about everything that Alito does? Does it make sense? Or maybe it does make sense. Maybe it's quite reasonable that he displays prejudice at every time he can do so.
Well, the thing about with Alito now is that he doesn't try to hide it. At least he doesn't want to have the blame for it. When you're flying flags that have a political meaning, which, you know, there's a First Amendment right to do that. But if you're going to be deciding cases that involve those issues, then you really traditionally should be recusing yourself. But neither he nor Thomas have any intent to do so. There's no integrity. And this is a major failing of John Roberts as a Chief Justice, that he hasn't been able, either willing or able, to tell his colleagues, look, folks, you're ruining the reputation of this court. And You've got to do this. As a matter of fact, they don't even have, you know, the ethics standards that the other federal courts have that require it. But you don't need to have the standards if you have the integrity.
But wait a minute, you're making a weird case. What you really are arguing, I don't think you mean to argue this, but what you really are arguing is that Alito has these beliefs, but he should hide them. Isn't it better if he has these beliefs that we know all about it?
I'm not saying that he should hide them, but I think in another day and age, people would have hidden them. He now has, you know, remorse or no compunction to let everybody see it even in advance. And that's the difference. That this is now the quiet part that's being said aloud in effect.
In a certain sense, I'm in favor of that. I mean, I don't agree with John Roberts when he says we're umps. We judges are umps. We just call balls and strikes. You know, we don't influence the game. There's no such thing as a non-activist judge. They shape the law. Right. It's better for people to know that.
Oh, certainly that they know that. And yeah. I've been critical.
That's why
of him.
I don't like it when these nominees come up for judgeships and they say, well, we can't discuss it. This issue might come up and I can't prejudge it. That's a lie. They all have attitudes. They wouldn't be competent if they didn't have attitudes, ideologies, opinions. No. We should know it.
Well, if they've got a judicial record, you have a pretty good idea of where they're coming from. Don't forget, we've got three people, at least three on the court, who said that they would uphold stare decisis.
Yeah, and they lied.
And they lied.
Yeah.
They lied at the opportunity that they got on that. And, of course, now we have the backlash.
Alito makes the case, and the apologists for Alito make the case for his wife, well, they have the right of free speech. I don't know that they have the right of free speech. The right of free speech certainly gets circumscribed when your circumstances require it. You can't yell fire in a crowded auditorium if there's no fire, right? That was a test of the Supreme Court, limiting the right of free speech. It seems to me that when you take a job, the job limits your rights. If you have any job, you can't just get up and say what you want to say or do what you want to do and claim you have the right of free speech. Your boss will say, no, you're working for me. While you're here, you do it this way. And he has the right to do that. Therefore, you don't have the right to do that. If Alito accepted the job of being a judge on the Supreme Court, he agrees that he shouldn't have the right just to talk, to prejudice the reputation of the court and to show his prejudice and intimidate justice and seekers of justice. He gives up that right. Nobody forces him to take that job. It's a voluntary thing.
Well, that's why you have our recusal.
That's right. And
why you have recusal. Yeah. If you're not going to give that right up, then you have to disassociate yourself from anything that's affected any opinion you wish, or any vote you wish to have.
There's no enforcement. Alito makes the point just the other day that there's nothing in the Constitution that gives any institution or anybody any say over disciplining the Supreme Court.
Well, that's not true either.
But he said that.
That's not. I understand he said that, but the Article 3 judges, they serve at the pleasure of Congress, and Congress, once they're there, it's a lifetime appointment. Their salaries cannot be diminished, but Congress can make rules. Congress can tell them you only have jurisdiction over these cases, or you don't have jurisdiction over these cases. There's a lot of things that Congress can do. Of course, the Supreme Court, with that kind of arrogance, is going to say, well, we're going to rule any restrictions on us unconstitutional, but that would be a real battle that we're not quite in yet. But we may.
Well, how would that battle work out? How would it be decided?
Well, that's going to be interesting because Congress could do other things too. Part of it is just moral suasion, calling them in front of the Congress and exposing all of this to try to get public opinion on their side. Or they could do other things. You can't defund the the judges, but you could defund the court.
You could add justices to the court.
And you could add justices to the court, which is something that was talked about. Certainly you could
And
do
has
that.
Been done, right? I mean,
yes.
There were once seven judges, not nine judges.
Oh, there were the original I had six, there was five, there were.
Americans don't realize that the form of the government frequently changed in the past. Americans yes. tend to think nowadays it was somehow brought down by Moses and it's that way and it's fixed and nothing can change. It can change and it should change.
Well, now you're getting to Christian nationalism, that the Constitution was a gift from God.
Moses is a Christian?
Well, but the Ten Commandments they've adopted. So
they took them over, right?
They took them over, and matter of fact, there's going to be more cases about that coming up again too. But you know, there was another element that Alito had. You know, that he, at least in the first instance, the upside down one, he blamed his wife. You know, he threw the woman under the bus. So
well, everybody blames their wife.
Well,
Senator Menendez blamed his wife.
His wife, yeah, that's the thing. I saw a cartoon this week, you know, essentially, you know, with the Supreme Court justice saying to someone, my wife ate my decision, you know.
which is about the attitude that many of these Republicans have toward women.
Yes. Yeah. And that's part of where they want, where these cases about contraception are going. And, you know, back to the... back to the back alley, so to speak.
Yeah.
Back to the back alley.
Yeah. Well, talking about the gerrymandering decision in South Carolina, we had elections in Georgia and Oregon.
Yes.
Primary elections. Fannie Willis came in, easily won her election, the primary, and the judge, too.
As did the judge in that case, yeah. Oregon was more interesting because they've had issues out there, particularly in Portland, about the quality of life, the amount of homelessness and street crime and whatever. And the DA there was thrown out quite convincingly. One of his deputies ran against him and said that it's one thing to... you know, acknowledge some of the underlying causes of crime and try to help people. It's another thing to just allow rampant lawlessness, which is degrading the quality of life for everybody.
I'm not exactly certain how the DA is responsible for policing.
Not policing, but prosecuting. And that's the thing. And, of course, the problem is that there's more than just prosecution there. There's systemic issues. How many people you're going to put in jail? How many of these people are really need drug or alcohol help? How many of these people are mentally ill?
But the people who are opposing these progressive DAs, they're not tackling it from that point of view. They're tackling it from the point of view of retribution.
Right.
So... you know,
just put everybody in jail, throw away the key.
Exactly, which hasn't worked even on the law and order side. It hasn't worked.
By the way, we don't want to pay the taxes to fund the jails.
Right. But the more interesting thing about the Oregon elections was not the DA's election, but was the congressional elections. And to me, what was most interesting was that there was $7 million spent on one election, on one district. The head of the Progressive Caucus, her sister ran to be the Democratic candidate. $7 million was spent against her by three different PACs, one of which hasn't yet reported who its donors were, so nobody knows exactly who they are, but it's assumed that it was APAC. The other two are known. $7 million in one Democratic Party primary is a lot of money.
Yeah, and that's been part of the problem now is the amount of money that's needed in a local congressional race. You know, you used to have money that was spent on a presidential race, which is now in the billions. And then you had the Senate races, which, of course, require more money because they're all statewide. And the congressional races or the state legislative races used to be fairly quiet, no more. There's big money being spent all over the place. We're going to have that right here in northeastern Pennsylvania with the with Matt Cartwright's race and the adjacent race down in the Lehigh Valley, Susan Wild's race. The Cook Report came out this week and rated them as 1-2 as the most vulnerable members of Congress in Pennsylvania and indeed maybe in the country. So there's going to be a lot of money spent on those things. We know that last week the Speaker of the House came to Luzerne County to talk to the big money donors down there on behalf of Rob Bresnahan, who's challenging Matt Cartwright. And we'll have to see how much money is made available to him. Cartwright certainly has an advantage. He's been raising money like crazy. I think he's raised over $3 million, which is a lot considering, places, a part of his district like Wayne and Pike County, there's not a huge population. So it's going to come down to Lackawanna, Luzerne, and parts of Monroe County there. We'll have to see.
Bresnahan has money himself. I mean,
he has money himself. The question is that how much of it is going to spend? Cartwright had an opponent a few cycles back that had a lot of money himself, but he was an outsider. He came in from New Jersey, didn't do very well. There was talk of him coming back and trying again, but I think he decided that his money was better spent on himself. We had that guy in Maryland that spent, $62 million?
Yeah, I was just going to say, money doesn't always make it.
No. We had that way back. Remember, John Connolly ran for president and spent all that money and got, one delegate or something?
Well, how about Giuliani? He spent $52 million. He got no delegates.
Right. The same thing. So it doesn't always matter, but it can matter.
Exactly.
It can matter in certain places. I think there's going to be money spent in the state legislative races down in Luzerne County. There's an open seat, Aaron Coffer's open seat, mm-hmm. that used to be held by a Democrat, Phyllis Mundy. The Republicans managed to get a write-in candidate against Eddie Kuczynski. Jim Haddock, who's got a district in Lackawanna and Luzerne County, they were spending money trying to soften him up even before the primaries, even though he had no primary opponent. So,
how about McCormick? Have you been seeing anything for him?
Yeah, don't forget, McCormick's will have access to all the money he needs. One, because he's a hedge fund guy and he's got plenty himself, but his hedge fund pals, and now there's a group, Keystone Renewal Pack, that's out there with ads. And they're attacking Biden, and their main attack and thrust is over immigration at this point, and calling that there's chaos. It's the Trump line, there's chaos or carnage or whatever you want to call it. And McCormick he'd make it safe for us, and that you need leadership. But Casey's got money, too, and he's been going after corporate greed. I don't know how much that is. I suspect that we're going to have some abortion money spent in this race pretty soon, because that's, according to the Pew study, that seems to be the number, the best topic for the Democrats. The best topic for the Republicans is, of course, as I said, immigration, and followed by the economy.
Do you think it pays to talk about the truth? I mean, this business about chaos on the southern border is just not true. As a matter of fact, the number of encounters in May was down, 52%. That's a lot.
Yep. But the images have been baked in. People have, over the last several years, have seen enough news coverage, even not just by Fox and Newsmax on the right, but also the mainstream TV channels, have shown plenty of things happening at the border. And the Republicans have gone down to try to get PR shots from the mainstream, media on that. And people have seen whole groups walking across the border, or even the caravans of people walking north from Central America into Mexico and those things. But, we don't know yet. Come July, August, which are rapidly approaching, what might be in people's minds, and what world events might still occur, or national events may still occur. We'll have to.
You said that the big issues for the Republicans, the things that they're campaigning on, Trump is campaigning on, number one, the criminality of the hordes of gangsters who are pouring across the southern border, and that's number one.
Right.
And number two is the economy. Number one is all a lie on every front. But I'm not going to get into that. But what do you think that Republicans mean when they talk about the economy?
Well, it's inflation. It's inflation, and it's what, on the macro side, the American economy is doing very, very well. We're the best and the strongest economy in the world. We've recovered from the COVID epidemic far better than any other country has. I mean, just look at what happened in England, in Britain. They're in really bad shape. You look at unemployment numbers. Remember after the Great Recession under George W. Bush, it took almost a decade to recover from that in terms of jobs and economic well-being. And we've recovered in less than 4 years with the jobs, and have record employment and record low unemployment, including in the minority communities, and including in places like here in northeastern Pennsylvania that always trail the national economy in terms of employment and unemployment. So that on that macro level, we're doing very well. And also wages are rising. They passed bills to increase the minimum wage and all that stuff. The problem is people don't see it, or they're not crediting Joe Biden for it. What they're seeing is two or three things. Number one is you go to a grocery store and your bills are up considerably. You go to a gas pump and the prices are still too high. And then the third thing is if you go to a restaurant and eat out, and you start seeing how much it costs. Although now we're seeing things like McDonald's and Burger King are battling over $5 meals. But that sort of stuff, people relate to it better. And even in the polling, people have said, I'm doing fine, but I don't think the country is doing fine. And that dichotomy. So that's a reality that we have to.
So how do the Democrats hit that?
That's a good question.
So far, they haven't been successful in striking a note that people
that
resonate with people.
That's right. I think they have to, not only emphasize that things aren't as bad, but I think they have to go on the attack and say Trump would only make things worse.
Well, how would he do that? How would he make it worse?
Well, he'd make it worse by taking away safety net things like Social Security, like health insurance. By the way, insurance is up too. But he would, he's going after, and Biden does have an ad about this, he's going after the Affordable Care Act, which saved so many people when they lost their jobs during the pandemic. That's what you have to go after, I think, and tell them that all Trump wants to do is give more tax breaks to the wealthy, and it's going to cost your safety net isn't going to be there.
Trump wants to do more than give tax breaks to the wealthy, because his desire to unleash the greatest wave of deportations the country has ever known, which is exactly what he says he wants to do. He wants to deport, he says, between 16 and 20 million illegals. That's what he calls them, and that's the number that he puts on them. Now, the number of undocumented immigrants living in this country is probably 10 million. But if he's after doubling that, that means he's going to go after people who are living here legally, or the children who were born here, because he doesn't believe that birthright citizenship should exist, even though it's part of the Constitution, and mm-hmm. it's been with us since the country was founded. But he's against it. Now, imagine the atmosphere in the country if special gangs of enforcement police, which is what he's talking about organizing, run through the places where people without documents who live here and work here are working. 25% of the agricultural labor force are those people. That means a crisis in the production of fruits and vegetables. That means enormous inflation immediately. Of course, what drives inflation is has been housing and food. Now the immediate effect of such an insane drive, the immediate economic effect, would be to immediately push up the price of food. So if inflation is what the Republicans are talking about, and that's their big second or first big issue, and immigration is the number one issue, then their number one issue is going to make their number two issue explode, make it worse for everybody.
But it's going to be too late. Too late.
No, but it can be pointed out. Of course it'll be too late if it happens, but it has to be pointed out.
And you're going to get the same attitude of the Trump voter, which is, well, we got to try something. I don't believe that this is going to be it. And even if it is, it's worth it to get rid of these people.
Well, the point is, it's not worth it to get rid of these people.
Well, but that's not how they're going to think.
No, but it doesn't matter what they think. They're the minority. We're fighting here for a group of people. We want to turn out the Democrats, and we want to turn out independents who are open to reason. We're not fighting for the allegiance of brainwashed MAGA people.
Well, you can look at the example in England with Brexit, but if you're dealing with reason versus emotion, emotion wins.
That's usually true. But if your emotion is, I can't afford food, and the Democrats come along and say, yeah, but the Republicans are going to raise the price of your food by 10-15%, forget about it.
Well, that's one of the things that the Democrats could do in attacking is showing ads of the food lines under Trump. Remember those?
Yes.
We had those. So that's something I think that they at least going to have to try. Whether it's going to be effective, we'll know in November whether that's effective or not.
All right, we're coming to the end here. We've had three or four things we wanted to talk about we never have got to. For example, Haley saying she'll vote for Trump. In other words, she's endorsing Trump. Biden, not yet on the ballot in Ohio.
Yes.
And, of course, the NCAA agreeing to pay college athletes. Let's get to this next week.
Yes, they've gotten the short end of the stick. And, by the way, this weekend is Memorial Day, and that's another area. Donald Trump, remember, he called people who were captured or died suckers?
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to hurt him among a certain group of voters, but it should, and we should remember these people. My dad used to always call it Armistice Day. He was old enough to remember between the wars that's what it was called, and we hope that we don't have to add more graves to the Memorial Day observances in the future.
But isn't it despicable that a man who claims to be a patriot denigrates the people that defended the country that he claims to be the patriot for?
It is, and it's more despicable that he can get away with it. With
certain people. It's just dreadful. All right. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.